interrupting the current, neo-Ukrainian, climate-changed, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind a woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM532. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. Silence is not an option, folks, because they always eat the crickets. And always remember, you're not told what you want to hear behind the woodshed, but what you need to hear. And today, what you need to hear, apparently, is all your vulnerabilities again. Be careful. You get a gift somehow randomly received as a smartwatch. Don't turn it on. Investigators warn. So don't give the bearing of gifts, I think, is maybe something here. Smartwatch is capable of automatically connecting to cell phones and Wi-Fi and gaining access to user data or being shipped to members of the United States military, seemingly at random, raising cybersecurity concerns. The Department of Army Criminal Investigation Division, or CID, in an announcement last week, warned that the watches may contain malware, potentially granting whoever sent the peripherals access to saved data to include banking information, contacts, and account information, such as usernames and passwords. So this is also going into other areas. They track you down where your location is. You don't want to be that guy that they get the, or gal that gets the missile bearing for. So here we be careful. Strangers bearing gifts, maybe not such a good thing. Just another little warning here. This vulnerabilities that we are facing coming into this brave new digital world is immense. So we really can't turn away from some of this. In this case, the military, that's a pretty serious thing. And I suspect possibly other people may be targeted down the road. This is the first bit of it. And then they keep going. Turn on, to help some of this on your phone, turn your phone off every night at 5 minutes. There's malware in your system. They apparently don't last too long. They're sitting maybe in the RAM. But they say offer you an advice to turn off your phone at least for 5 minutes. I don't know why people keep them on all night. Maybe lots of people need to talk with you while you're trying to sleep. Australia's Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has told residents that they should turn their smartphone off and on again once a day as a cybersecurity measure, and tech experts agree. Like, he's the expert now. Albanese said the country needed to be proactive and to thwart cyber risks as he announced the appointment of Australia's inaugural National Cybersecurity Coordinator. That's all against you folks. But anyway, for you, you don't want to keep these malwares running. Go ahead and recycle that phone at least once, if not a couple times. And I'll just stop right there. Just a warning. I think it's important to understand what's going on, how we get infiltrated, how these insidious parasites get in on us, and how it might be so easy to shut them off. As I see this, it must be sitting in, it's collected up and put in your RAM. So when you recycle your phone, it kills it. It just takes it out of the RAM, resets the RAM to zeros or whatever it does there to reset it. So the other, moving on to, we hate all that malware. We do it how Americans also hate ISPs almost as much as they hate gas stations, the survey finds. I found this kind of interesting. I never really had a thought about a gas station. We choose to go there. Either that, now it'll be a Tesla charging station here pretty soon. As I should say that, Tesla did a very important thing. They got their standard plug out, and now it's going to be adopted. It was made open source, and that standard's going to be across the country. A lot of auto manufacturers are picking up on it. And I would also say, look very deeply into electrical cars. They're neat, but maybe on a very limited basis. They're very expensive, and talk about malware. It's rolling malware. Americans hate their internet service providers, or ISP, more than any other segment of the consumer economy except gas stations. A fresh set of rankings from the American Consumer Satisfaction Index, ACSI, reveals that few consumers are happy with the way their ISPs conduct business, preferring them only over trips to the pump in a list of 43 major industries. I guess we'll just talk right there. Yes, these ISPs are kind of interesting, especially the phone ones. I just abhor the contracts they have. I abhor their policies. It's all made for additional profit. It's all made, it seems, to not give you the service, to make excuses for bad service, to cover up overselling of service. And there's got to be something about that to stop it. But yes, it's anything you're kind of into, have to do. In this case, you're choosing to use the phone, and you I'm not sure if you're choosing to use the ISP. Some of those are pretty, I guess, by the company. Maybe you have a choice, but when they have you into a monopoly, and think about this, when you get into your currency, your monetize your token citizenship, talk about a monopoly right to the top, and you got to go through this ISP anyway, or else you don't get to eat. You don't even get to complain that you have an ISP because you're out. So there's the hate going on with the system that's being built up. I think it's an interesting and healthy thing to do, but you can't sit quiet because it just kind of rolls on. The profiteers keep profiteering and plundering. And we have an investigation coming. Whether or not this will work for us, I don't know, but I think it's important to seek these out or try to start them or engage. As I've told you, we've done with a lot of these things in the past where you see an agency comment period or some investigation they're doing. Maybe it's time to, if you find the subject matter important, jump in and make your comment known. And I say do it with some substance. And we've seen some things happen that cause shifts where you don't have to get too involved. If they don't cause a shift enough and you've got a valid point, then as I've shown you, you can go to court if you want to do that to bring the agency to do with the things that the Administrative Procedures Act in the federal case here, Title V, suggests very strongly they have to follow. In this case, I think it's more of an investigation that's going on that I think it may be valid to consider or continue to watch for if it's ended, because they kind of go through cycles. The FCC chair to investigate exactly how much everyone hates data caps. This is not just the ISP. This is the data caps. The ISP clearly have technical ability to offer unlimited data, chair office says. This is inside of another problem. And this is, I just went through their policies of the providers. These data caps, essentially, they not sure that they're unlimited, but they can provide that to you. What they tend to do is they tell you that they fear that somebody's going to hook up 1,000 devices and feed that data to everybody let's say, a household. I don't know what that's just a spacious argument, because they'll just, most of these accounts are not actually data, they're data capped, even a 50 gigabyte. If they have 100 devices hooked up, who cares? They're just going to run to the data. But they use that as an excuse to limit your access. And in this case, on some phones, you notice that they don't even know that they've cut you off. They don't even give you the minimum broadband speed, which I think is 128 kilobytes a second. They don't even give you that. And so there's a whole lot of information that's not working out. So when you get into a discussion like this, this question may be off point. We may not like the data caps, but they're not giving us the information or in a way that we actually get to use the data anyway. And what I think this might be, it looks like, relative to the amount of data they may have to put out, even though the technology is there, it's still not quite there yet, actually, for what they've got. They will cut you off to try and give it to somebody else. And so, anyway, in this story, the Federal Communications Commission chairwoman, Jessica Rosenworcel, wants the FCC to open a formal inquiry into how data caps harm Internet users and why broadband providers still impose the caps. Inquiry could eventually lead to the FCC regulating how our internet providers provide, such as Comcast, impose limits on data usage. But my thing is that it seems to me it's not just the usage, it's that they're feeding it to you inconsistently. You have to load, if it's going in too slow, you can't load a website, you got to load it multiple times, it interferes, it hangs, it does all this stuff. You can't even use your data. Forget the cap, you can't even use the data. And then you get to you're not even getting your cap because they're messing you up, and then you get to the end of your policy, and you haven't even used the data you bought. So that's about more digits to them, more profit that they've put in their pricing. So this is a bigger problem. I appreciate that she's maybe sitting there looking at this. I guess she got fed up. But these are the kinds of things that I've told you before. Look for that if they interest you. You have a gripe, and it happens to be these phones and these caps and these ISPs, the big Comcast provider, AT&Ts, whomever they are. Maybe it's time that we speak about the problems we have instead of just grumbling over them. And that seems to be a lot of our problems that I see, is we tend to kind of grumble a lot. And that's not necessarily so bad, but at some point the rubber has to meet the road. We need to get better services. We need to get better access, not led by the nose all the time. While everyone else makes the big bucks and waste, that's the other thing, wasting your time while you're trying to get your data, while you're trying to get the call through, while waiting for your message, they get theirs. You don't hardly ever get there. I realize that I think every organization that is a big tech organization always gets their message to you, and you hardly ever get out to where you need to go when you need it. So there's all these conditions that sit there that if this FCC chairwoman is interested, maybe you can petition for more things. Maybe there needs to be a whole investigation. I understand that the industry is going to step up and defend that, the position they've got, but it seems to be when you talk to the, let's say, a customer service provider agent, they don't have a lot of information for you. If you know what you're looking and listening for, they don't even want to admit that they even know about you. They don't know what... They'll say they don't even know how much throughput you have, which I don't understand. Then how can they not know that if they know how many digits you've used in order to track your package, how much you've paid for? If they know your digits, they know how fast they gave it to you. So there's a big lie going on, and I think I was appreciative to see that someone in the government was starting to take an issue with it. Something else I think that people are hating as they watch the election system be a failed institution. As I've told you, I've learned that a long time ago, and I backed off when I started to also read about what voter registration was, and what you're actually saying, and the status you build, and where. All of a sudden, that all became important, and then found out about the machines way back in the 90s could be hacked and reprogrammed. And so all this stuff to me is just old news. I backed off of that a long time ago. It doesn't really seem to matter in a way. I'm not a guy you would talk to about the election. You know, to me, it's vote harder. But we also then see another thing that people tend to miss on this. These parties are private. They're like little private organizations. And what's interesting is they're built into the Constitution that the president of the, when somebody gets voted in to be president, they're to promote that party. That's why you see Trump going around and promoting his folks in that party. So it's interesting that this is like a party, private party. Private party that we're having, that these folks have decisions that they can make that you're kind of edged out. And this court report here suggests that strongly. Court concedes DNC had the right to rig primaries against Sanders. Pretty fascinating. It's a private organization, a party, and you get to join up and be a member. And their rules, it's like a private union. They get to make up whatever they want. They can do whatever they want. It's up to the membership to stop it. It's not much different than how we think where voting works in the government. In June 2016, a class action lawsuit was filed against the Democratic National Committee, DNC, to former DNC chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz for violating the DNC charter by rigging the Democratic presidential primaries for Hillary Clinton against Bernie Sanders. Even former Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid admitted in July 2016, everybody knew this was not a fair deal. He added that Debbie Wasserman Schultz should have resigned much sooner than she did. The lawsuit was filed to push the DNC to admit their wrongdoing and provide Bernie Sanders supporters who support him financially with millions of dollars in campaign contributions with restitution for the cheating. On August 25th, 2017, Federal Judge Zolich dismissed the lawsuit after several months of litigation during the DNC. Attorneys argued the DNC would be well within their rights to select their own candidate. In evaluating the plaintiff's claims at this stage, the court assumes their allegations are true, that the DNC and Wasserman Schultz held a palpable bias in favor of Clinton and sought to propel her ahead of her Democratic opponent. The court ordered dismissal of the lawsuit. The assumption of the plaintiff's allegations in this general legal standard is the motion to dismiss stage of a lawsuit. The allegations contained in the complaint must be taken as true unless they are merely conclusory allegations or invalid on the face. Essentially, they're saying this is a private union, and the party, the ruling people in those offices of that party can choose who they want by whatever they want, however public process they want, and there's no fault. And so you're seeing the private nature of what we think is the public election system. And this is another thing I learned a long time ago. You're dealing in these interesting little private institutions. Talk about the public-private partnership. These like they're built right into the Constitution. So we're coming to an awareness. I don't know what it means to people. I don't know what they're going to invest in. I don't know what they're going to do in response. There's a pragmatic decision to just walk away and shrug your shoulders and keep your head down and do your life. But as I found out, I've told you, you can't go even into the forest and try to be left alone. They'll search you out. They'll find you out, and they want to know about you and what you're doing. They'll take a negative inference, and they'll take a negative intention about you. And so it's that's partly the problem and why I say you really can't not speak when there's a problem. You cannot engage, but then you have to understand that you're letting others take that down the road. And another thing relative to elections, and I found this kind of interesting, I hadn't really thought about it too much. The Delaware City is set to give corporations the right to vote in elections. Corporations are people too, we've been told. And here they are, you can vote. And there's some reason I can see partly why you would let that go, but this is rot with problems when you find out that, well, a head of a corporation can be your neighbor, now they have two votes. The other thing that's interesting, I thought this does potentially fix the problem where you got a property owner that's out of state and they don't have a voice. They might give a voice, but this just seems an open door for a major corruption. In the story you'll read, I won't go through more of it, but Delaware is an interesting state as well. It's absolutely corporation friendly. There's gobs and gobs of corporations there, so all these people too would have a vote. And they could overwhelm the voting system for the people as well. But it also shows like a property manager that has conjunction with a lot of property companies can have a lot of power in themselves to vote one way if they want. So this is an interesting thing. Delaware being the hub of where most corporations go to sign up, corporations are people too, they get a vote. Is that the future you want to go? Well, in Delaware, they're going to make it that way. There's other states that do this too. I hadn't even really heard about it. I hadn't thought about it. But it just shows us how we think it's the vote from the people. It's no longer that way. And there's a couple reasons why that happened. And we watched as they changed the tenor of the focus of a corporation. And then we found out that we really can't go after them anymore when they do wrong. What they've done is they've made a violation to a law and agency, which then fines them, and that's supposed to be in the public benefit and public good to do so. So whether or not this is something you might hate, it certainly, in my mind, starts to put a taint on the election system that we thought was going on. And we're watching the modification happen over time as people get influenced and they move on to make new decisions. And if you're not engaged with that, and part of this is I don't like hearing myself say it, it's almost like now the system is, if you aren't engaged, roll up your sleeve and be engaged with the system, you don't even have a life now because of how this thing is working out. And a lot of this is because we've been crickets as a society, thought it was all working in the right direction, didn't realize we were infiltrated. And we're infiltrated and surrounded. And we were infiltrated by foreigners. And if you don't think a corporation's foreign to you, as someone who's alive, remember, corporations are born too. There's a different process, but they're still mimicking a life. And so they now have this big voice, if we didn't already know that. I just find the story really interesting relative to what they're trying to do with it and how people can just be, especially in this city here, in the state of Delaware, people can just be marginalized just by this kind of a policy. Not wired to keep up with it, but maybe you are. Maybe it's interesting to you, and if you're into elections and you think that that's really powerful, and I'm not, it may be for you. This is what's on the horizon for you. You better consider engaging where that is, figuring out some of the reasons why that shouldn't be if you don't like it, or look at you see it changing. That means you can change it if something's wrong. And it takes you've got to roll up your sleeves and take the time it takes. So a lot of people hate doing that too, but this is what we're going on. This is how we're living. And those systems that are in place that already have the understanding of the system are really in the control. A lot of this stuff doesn't come out until somebody in that system that's got the seats of decision controlled. In this case, if you talk about the Bar Association, their members, their lawyers, they're in every judicial, they're in every district. Every corporation has to have a bar member for representation. Then you see the kind of control that gets built into systems like this. So I don't know where we go with all that. It's just information. It's awareness. I guess my thought on all that is if you start to look, you were naive about all that and you've been participating. Now, I'm not saying it's necessarily bad in every case, but if you put a lot of points on, we got to get the vote, vote for this guy, vote for that woman, whatever, maybe that's really not the way it's working and you need to consider maybe where you put your energy and how you put it. You may still be finding it important, but you're going to maybe have to come at it a different way to make it proper. And that's, again, another subjective position. And what the system will do is try to work out the new relative harms relative to the outcomes that they want. And those folks are in seats of decision most likely all the time. And that's why it's kind of an anomaly to watch someone who isn't of the system come up. But Trump was kind of like that. He's not an insider. He's not of the swamp. But you don't see them last too long. And there's only very few people I know that will go through a couple of election cycles after they've been outed for being someone that actually cares for people. And I don't know why that is, but people don't stand up to protect them, but they're out. They're out pretty quickly. So another thing that government must hate is the information, free release of information. This ends up being a copyright issue, and I can kind of see part of it, but currently part of it I can't. I guess it's up to you how you feel about it. Z Library releases Tor-enabled desktop launcher to improve accessibility. And this is because the government hates this group. It's an ebook repository called Z Library. They've been moving all over the place. They have hundreds and hundreds of website domains, and the government comes down and shuts them all down. The problem is, how do you keep people informed of where this book library of ebooks is? All kinds of information. And they decided to have an app, and the app will then be adjusted, updated to where the new site is. If it gets taken down, they'll give you an update, and they'll give you it's easier to find the websites to get the document, the book, or whatever the media that you want to read. Pirate ebook repository Z Library has released a dedicated desktop application that should make it easier to access the site going forward. The service is at the center of a criminal crackdown and has lost hundreds of domain names, which in part triggered the development of this new software. Over the years, Z Library established itself as the premier source of pirated books, serving an audience of millions of users. Up until a few months ago, this all happened relatively quietly. But everything changed when the United States launched a criminal case against two of its alleged operators. The Z Library lost access to over 200 domain names last year, and a few weeks ago, the authorities carried out a new domain seizure around, despite these enforcement actions, the pending criminal case. The remaining Z Library team has no plans to throw in the towel. So we can go read some more. They have their reason why they do that. They're not looking at it as a copyright issue. They're looking at it as an access issue for information. My view at that point, when the way they talked about why they do it for research, I thought copyright doesn't apply to research. We have the ability to get this information for the purpose of research, not necessarily for a thought. And I could, maybe if I'm wrong, well, maybe someone could send me an email and explain this to me. That when you don't have to buy all the books that you need to do a research. It's kind of like the literal library. You walk in and you do your research and you put it all back. I know the digital environment makes it a little bit difficult that way when there's lots of people grabbing the same so-called single file copy. And this is the archive.org is a problem right now as well. But it made it sense to me that as a researcher, I shouldn't have to go buy all these books when I'm only doing research, because in a way it's an extension of a modified use when you're doing an analysis on people's work or something like that. So maybe somebody has a different opinion. I've felt it's important to have access to this information. Considering, look at what they do with all these scientific studies, and they put them underneath a paywall, it's especially with taxpayer money, it's particularly disturbing when you're looking for information. However, we also notice that the so-called scientist, is not really interested in doing science anymore, and studies, not necessarily science, and yet they want to get paid for that, so they keep their, I guess that's how they keep their coffers running as well, on top of your tax money, so-called. But anyway, something here, if you're interested in Z Library, a long time ago I checked at it. I'm not much into tracking this information down. It was overwhelming to see what they did have. But some of you may be looking for particular books and things, and they may have them. So there's an app. It makes it easy. When they shut down a domain, they'll tell you where the new one is. There's also some surrogates that are being built up that are harder to find. And then they're also moving it into that P2P type thing. So that's really where the answer is going to be, I think, is this really super private, decentralized type of internet access. We'll keep an eye on all that a bit for ourselves, and I think that's because, as I was talking, I think last week, the access to information is critical. It's up to us to learn to discern what's good misinformation, disinformation, and all. I don't need some caretaking nanny to tell me what it is. And so we should have access to it where it has to do with our lives in any number of subject matter areas. I think they kind of play a valuable service here. And I guess there could be a debate over those that want to be paid for their copyright against my right to want to have information in order to make decisions about my society or what I need to do, or about them, about their credibility, or whatever, compare them with others. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff we could be doing, and shouldn't have to worry about a copyright. If you look at the copyright law, I can do value added, and they can't do anything with it anyway. Now, some people take gross advantage of that. I don't necessarily agree with that part. If you want to have a fair work and get paid for it, you shouldn't steal someone's work wholly. If you've got other uses for it, then I don't know. There's provisions for that in the copyright law. You know, fair use stuff, if you will. On the other hand, this is somebody who doesn't want to give information, doesn't want to continue an act. And this is an interesting battle that goes on. We're talking big tech. I think it's like big money. I don't know. I don't see big tech as big tech. The tech is not terribly big. It's extensive, but it's not a big breaking edge, copyright patentable technology. It's corporations taking advantage of the public infrastructure of the internet. So I think they're just big money, not big tech. However, big tech, as they define it, is not like in the law up in Kyrgyzstan, where if they provide a link to a news, to any other place that has a news organization or any other information that's got copyright, they have to pay a fee for the copyright. And that law is now causing these big money technological companies like Facepalm, Meta, Google, to pull out of any links that go to, let's say, a news site, because they don't want to pay for it. Some companies are making arrangements. I guess it's going to be a third party, more like music, where you pay for the right to use the music that's in their library that they have control over, and they divide up the spoils for like a copyright claim. And you get paid for that for the use. Just for a link now, you understand. So in Kyrgyzstan, that's what they've done. Facebook to end news access in Kyrgyzstan over incoming law on paying publishers. Legislation known as the Online News Act was approved by the Senate upper chamber earlier on Thursday and will become law after receiving royal assent from the Governor General, a formality. Let's go back to there. Royal assent from the Governor General if you thought you were free from the king in Kyrgyzstan. I've talked about this before. This is a really interesting hierarchy, that Governor General, like we're in the military, just like in the United States, in different ways, is the agent of the crown, the royal, from over the pond that you thought you were separate from. And your laws are subject to that. And let's move on with that law. The legislation was proposed after complaints from the Kyrgyzstan's media industry, which wants tighter regulation on tech companies to prevent them from elbowing news businesses out of the online marketing. Today, we are confirming that the news availability will be ended on Faceplant and Instagram for all users in Kyrgyzstan prior to the Online News Act taking effect, Meta said in a statement. I guess I'll just let you read when you get to this one, or you would Google it, DuckDuckGo it, or start page it to find this information if you're interested. This is a really interesting story. Trudeau stepped up, the crook he is, and he calls that bullying tactic. Now listen, you got to understand how this works as you hear that. The government's saying that if you don't want to associate with that state, you're a bully. Figure this one out. And the lame complaint is that they're going to make it harder for people to find these places. So they're admitting that these search engines and things do a service that they're not being paid for, apparently, for delivering that content. And yet Trudeau will deny that when the Faceplant moves out, when Meta moves out, Google moves out and doesn't provide news links, that it doesn't stop the website and news organization that has the link. It just makes it harder for you to find it. He caused that. They caused that. So it's a pretty weak position that the Kyrgyzstan did, shooting themselves in the foot. And I find it interesting that the big tech is saying, well, we don't need to send you your links. We just won't even do it. And now they're bullies. And I want you to consider that in the context of how irrational life is going. That now you, apparently, they presume that you can be forced. See, in the United States, that's a violation. You can't be forced into an association. Forced associations are unlawful. But apparently, Trudeau doesn't believe that. And this is the new idea. This is the global idea. You can be forced to do everything. In fact, you don't have rights or property, then you're going to be happy. You have to behave properly. See how that works? You're not behaving properly. We'll call you, we'll bring you under hate crimes. You're a bully. If you see how you start tying this together, you start to find out how they've been messing us around, bringing these principles into dropping seeds in people's minds. They start to accept this. It's totally ludicrous. It's insane. It's insanity. Bullying tactics to not want to associate with a policy or plan or whatever going on. Not providing a service. He's not paying for that service either, you see, as I just mentioned. So I find I won't read again too many more. You can read interesting little phrases, though, if you read the story of how the government tried to justify forcing someone to do something so that then they can extract a fee from you through a third party, the other media group, in order to pay the news people. And yet the news companies all at their address, their independent address, that you can't find without a search engine unless you know the number, right? This is all humanized. It's all business machines that's going on here. If you don't have a number, you don't have a way to get at them. They're the shingles, not on the information highway out there for you to find it. It doesn't take them down at all, but no one can find them now. Very interesting dynamic and all that. And so, I think we need to consider how this worked because they're using all these tactics against us in different ways. And they take advantage and then they don't give you some and then, or they take something from you. And then if you don't give them something, they force you to associate and then they give you the prize. And when it starts to get into that, that's what I read policies for. I see too much of that. I don't use their service. A lot of these companies that they'll put up a lot of pop-ups. After a while, I just don't go to that service. I go look for other places, and I have already made a decision. If I can't find that story, I know it's out there. If I can't find it, I won't care about it. I don't go to a place and have to deal with their monkey business trying to get and read a story they've got. I have no problem with giving a link on the broadcaster. You can go to that page. I'll talk about it. We'll read it. I can send you there. You can read it. You can go to their stuff. But I'm not going to go through a bunch of hoops to try and get to it. But you don't have a paywall. You have a paywall. I don't send anybody to your website if you're listening. I think, and he may have a problem. I haven't looked at it deep. I hear Twitter. You can't go now outside unless you sign in to go look at tweets. Well, this broadcast uses a whole lot of information that used to come from Twitter that I can't send you a link to because unless you sign in, and I'm not going to have to force you to sign in and associate just to go see their content. That's someone else provided. Now, he's doing that. Apparently, he's got a bot problem. I don't know about all that. All I know is that Twitter's no longer going to be a link until they fix that. You're not going to see Twitter links sitting in the broadcaster. I've had to pull back from Telegram. Telegram used to allow me to get in there, but I can't trust Telegram to give me a link that back to a news story or a story of some sort, a reference to an information. I've stopped where it doesn't come up after I change it to a different browser. If it doesn't come up, I don't put it in the broadcaster. So all these companies that start blocking content, I don't use them anyway. I will try to find an alternative. I'll work hard to find an alternative for you folks, or you can do the same thing and not go through all these hoops that they want us to jump through. And I think after a while, we as users, if they want to start calling us users, and they want us to watch an ad, they're going to have to be a little bit more respectful. The big guys aren't going to put up with it. You're going to cause money to come out of our pockets just to provide a link? No, we're not going to even be there. And the government howls. Oh, you bully. It's almost funny. Oh, well, it is funny. Pretty really funny. So, it's interesting what hate, bullying, the hate speech. The government's calling someone who doesn't want to associate hating you. Kind of like the deniers, right? The skeptics. You're put in this category and then you're vilified and damned like they have an authority. Oh, you didn't do it our way. And then they go stomping in your cornflakes or something. It's fascinating. They're just little-minded people needing to feel important. is, and this is where the whole society goes, I guess, just pointing it out, I want to comment to it, because we have to be cognizant of what's going on. They're driving this along, and as long as we continue to mindlessly click about, mindlessly go ahead and sign up, mindlessly be verified, mindlessly have to be even signed in, even if you're not verified, to do anything, that's a bunch of control mechanisms they're building into us that we shouldn't have to tolerate. We shouldn't even be anything that has to do with any more things than looking, engaging as a necessity. No, we just need to stop. And I don't know what more to say about that. It's like with all this cyber stuff and the phones and all these CBDCs, just stop having a phone for the purpose. Just for that purpose, you say you don't have a phone. Don't have a phone. Because that's the trap. You're going to have to be doing going through all of this. All these so-called services on the phones that they put on them. And you got to do sign-ups and sign-ins, and they got interrelational stuff. And even Google says, oh, you can't turn this feature off and it's tracking you. What? When did that happen? Well, if that's the case, I don't want your product. We're going to have to come to those determinations, no different than they did with the Bud Light or Target. All of this has to come under scrutiny for us. And so this next connection to cyber stalking is interesting to me. Again, the people howled about this, but I'm just wondering, well, I think this may be the right answer. I don't know if it's a think. I think it is the right answer. But what people, the stories they make up about the danger of this is kind of interesting too. And when you watch that, that's what those stories that they make up, the fairy tales of threat, are what they use in the future. Right now, when it goes to the Supreme Court, that'll lock that in, but they'll be coming later down in the bowels of the nation in laws and things like that to fix things over time regarding what does it take to become criminal. And this is a very interesting story coming in when you do speak, when you're sitting in a system, a forum, maybe like Faceplant, like in this one, and you go talk to someone and they get insulted. This case says that action on its own, that behavior on its own, cannot bring a criminal conviction. And so this brings up the other idea I've been saying relative to even like a Twitter, when they talk about hate speech or against community policies, it's not. The speech is forbidden. How is that? If it's not part of the five or six things in law, and it can't be shown through a court that it was a violation, and it hasn't been determined to be other than free speech, that company shouldn't be able to touch anybody. This case kind of touches there relative to your actions on the internet, and then whether or not those actions are criminal relative to just typing in communications. And I'm not saying that I don't tend to like to call people names or whatever. I don't like to just go after somebody, whatever the falsities you would tell someone, just to impress them or just hound them. I don't like doing any of that. But when it comes down to a government coming after you for your action, and when they show this vague name like hate, where they call you a bully, and you're saying, no, I don't want to engage, and now you're calling her a bully, or you get fairly aggressive with somebody, is it hate? Does it constitute a crime? In this case, stalking. Supreme Court guts protections for cyber stalking victims, this title is. I found this, again, I'm noticing this week a few perspective shifts. Again, we're reading through someone's opinion, not just a report. Now, critics say this is 7-2 decision will protect stalkers who are merely delusional about the consequences of their actions. And that part brings a big old problem for a couple of the justices, because they're saying, even this is a conservative justice, that brings it up into an even worse problem. They get to get away with more. The Supreme Court ruled Tuesday that in order for it to find somebody guilty of making a true threat, in quotes, the phrase, true threat, courts must first determine that the person recklessly disregarded the fact that their words might be perceived as a threat. Experts fear the decision will create new hurdles for victims of cyberstalking by requiring them to first prove that their stalkers understand the consequences of their actions. Let me just stop there for a moment. That is, I think, simply telling someone that they are violating you, that the ramification for that will be a criminal report. for their arrest for this. We may have to get more intelligent in the law about that. I'm not quite sure. We would have to go look and see what the proof for that point is, and we would then, as a people, be having to do that. And I think if we get into communicating with federal government, any agency or something, that's what you do anyway. You identify, if they're wrong, you identify the crime that they're doing. And you, short, very summary form, you tell them what the consequence would be. Now if they continue, they're on notice, right? That's really all this might be. But they've made a big hay, some of these justices here made a big hay about this. I found it interesting. So this true threat. What's a true threat? When, so you see somebody on the internet yelling at you, if you will, all in caps and sounding really nasty, and maybe actually making assertions too. But the case Counterman versus Colorado concerns a man named Billy Raymond Counterman, who was convicted under Colorado anti-stalking law after he sent a barrage of threatening Facebook messages to a woman he'd never met. The Colorado law didn't require the court to consider Counterman's mental state when he sent the message. It only had to consider his behavior and how it was objectively received, that is, whether he repeatedly contacted, followed, or surveilled his target in a way that would cause a, quote, reasonable person distress. Now, I just read that paragraph. Did you already hear the failure of the law and what they pointed to? And I'll just go back before I read the rest of the paragraph here, the paragraphs. They said that it didn't consider mental state. Criminal law requires intent and sometimes a standard of intent. Your mental state put onto your action. They're saying here at the Supreme Court, and I want everyone to listen to this because everything that's going into the future they want, this new world issue, this technocratic control grid, where I've been emphasizing behavior speaks to this. None of that on its own, that they want you to behave and you don't want to associate or behave like they say, it can be called a crime. Trudeau, it's not bullying. Behavior is not enough, I guess, is the punchline here before I read more. You see it right there. The Colorado law did not attach a mental culpability state. It can't be crime if it's just a behavior. Understand, so don't get lost on a simple case. It's really a simple decision. Counterman was found guilty under the statute, but he appealed his conviction, arguing that his statements were protected by the First Amendment and did not constitute, quote, true threats. A category of speech that falls outside the bounds of First Amendment because it wasn't his intention. There's the word. It wasn't his intention to threaten his target. In its decision, the Supreme Court overwhelmingly sided with Counterman. There's a joke in that somewhere, right, Counterman? Quote, the state prosecuted Counterman in accordance with an objective standard and did not have to show any awareness of Counterman's part of his statements' threatening character. The majority opinion written by liberal Justice Elaine Kagan reads, quote, that is a violation of the First Amendment. There must be a First Amendment out there somewhere, folks, right here. It's not in your behavior. It's in how they identify your intent. That's the crime part. Kagan's opinion acknowledges that there's a trade-off in this decision, but argues the trade-off is necessary to protect free speech. I'll end there. You can read the rest. Protected, prevailingly protected, before it can't be touched. There has to be an extenuating system to go ahead and reach in, and it's not actually a trade-off, even though they understand the problem with someone who feels they're a victim. And again, we're going to have to find out the way that you would identify and shift it from lack of intent to saying, no, you're intending this and I'm taking it that way. There's going to be probably a state law issue you'll have to go to find there. We'll have to be educating ourselves. I think that's the big problem with a lot of people that didn't like this. You have to go read something now and figure it out and understand your laws a little bit better before you can just say anybody hates you. People can rail and scream and yell and everything else, but you're going to have to understand where the line is when it finally might break over. First Amendment sits here first. It sits here is a prevailing right. Anyway, going on here, I think it's an interesting statement. Behavior is not sufficient to establish criminal intent, is it? That's just normal criminal law. You got to have that intent. You got to have that evil intent built into that, the malice or any. There may be different standards. So I think it's a very, very good decision. But tell you the truth, why did it get to the Supreme Court? Why didn't every court understand that that was the case? Why is because your lower courts are more set up and more trained by bar association members. Even remember, their bar judges are just voted in bar member attorneys to that office. And that upbringing that's coming through looks to behavior everywhere. Remember, the Bar Association promotes sustainable development. It's about behavior. The international document, the document, the House Delegates Resolution of the Bar Association has it since way back in 1991 to support sustainable development. It's about behavior. Agenda 23rd, about behavior. Sharing the wealth of the obligation, remember. This court case shut that down as for being criminal. So this is, you got to look very carefully. And those of you that find this interesting may want to pay attention to what your states are doing, whether they have. You can go look around the country now to see if they're talking about in your state for any of this stuff. It's just behavior. It won't be enough now. There has to be a measure of the type of intent at all. And then sometimes the type. And those are elements, and you have to have those facts before you. So I think this is a very interesting confirmation that behavior cannot be criminal. Trudeau, you got to listen to this. Just because someone wanted withheld, it's not even action, right? He's not doing anything. No, their withholding is not a crime, first of all. Secondly, the behavior is not a crime. There has to be an intent to do harm, and then that has to be objectively listed in the notice we call the law of how we will conduct ourselves. So typing up, and please don't do this. I mean, don't resort into, well, you can do what you want. I mean, it's free speech. What I'm saying is, I guess people may want to go exercise this now, but I don't think that's conducive to a proper place to live or treat people. I think there's more important things to do amongst ourselves and always have. So I guess I don't agree that there should be something so-called stalking us. But when we're looking at now the government getting involved to say it's a crime, we got to be very careful on where that line gets drawn, because that can be turned on us if it's not in the proper place or it's abused for many years, like 50 years, until they can get it corrected. And this is the failures of this system that I think is the rule of law and democracy, so-called. The brand of Bar Association justice. These aren't the finest minds that are doing this. This is just a bunch of people that found a liking to do certain things in the law. And then the systems that built up inside by these very same people, like the substitution of the permanent laws of the state in favor of a Model Business Corporation Act, was done by these people. So your whole state is actually functioning as a corporation right in your own statutes, and no one pays attention to how that does. We get the patriot, oh, it's a corporation, but they don't understand how it all works. And so we miss how the foundation's been contorted and shifted, and we talk about the stuff at the roof and we don't figure it out at the bottom. I don't know if I can say I've totally figured it out, but I figured that much. And that's why we get corporations or people too. And that's why we get to the point where the corporations are monopolies, and then we hate all that. But we have to use them, or we think we do. And I have to say that I'm not against the conveniences. I really am not. And we back to hate speech. Wonder how this law is going to function now when we talk about the other two. The new Michigan hate speech bill could result in felonies as the title, but how is that going to be when hate is really this amorphous word? We find out that so-called LGBTQ can't impose. You have to do certain other things that are involved. It's not about what you feel. Feel behavior, right? These things tied in. Tribal, all that's nonsense. These are all excuses to kind of get around what the standard really is. That case going up that's supposed to show us that you need intent for crime. I don't even know why it's up to the Supreme Court. How to judge, how to stream of judges get it that far. That's basic, like criminal law 101. You have to have an intent that's strong. You can't just go around causing trouble. I mean, just any action, behavior. Tensions are brewing in Michigan as a controversial hate speech bill, yet another, sails through State House and now awaits scrutiny of the Senate. The legislation, branded by critics as Pandora's Box, seeks to replace Michigan's Ethic Intimidation Act and aims to criminalize actions that make individuals, quote, feel terrorized, frightened, or threatened. A tangle in the bill lies in the vague wording, with the term harassment used as a jigsaw piece without a clear fit and a potential for a First Amendment violation. I'm going to have to tell you, my sense is that last case just disintegrated this case. Because we just say it's not a potential First Amendment violation. It will be one if you don't define the intent. And it's only about the behavior. The receiver of the information is not the determiner of crime. It's once the notice that the action has an intent to cause that is when that attaches. That can attach. It only attaches if there's an underlying law, too. And I just say, well, that's just going to make us as people have to understand our laws a little bit better. In some regard, I don't have a problem with that, actually, because I don't think I see a lot of people that have done that. I see a lot of people that take it into their own hands. And I forgot to tell you. Maybe I'll tell you now. People take the law in their own hands and cause a lot of trouble. And that's what I'm under right now. So I needed to, I forgot to even tell you about this. I'm sorry I'm into the broadcast this far. But I'm hoping the broadcast can continue. Every week's going to be a challenge to get it out. I don't have power, and I don't have water, and I don't have a sewer. They took it away. I didn't do it by the law, and so I've got a bunch of work before me to get back to some normalcy. I'm working with the help of a few people to provide me a generator, and so we sort of getting, you know, just the basics in back in. I've lived this way before. I'm going to have to then buckle down, and I have to now look at how to stop this criminality is what it is, on people that I thought were friends. And I don't know where it went south. That's not really neither here nor there, but for y'all listening to this broadcast, I don't want to threaten the broadcast not being here, but I don't know that each week that a broadcast could be made. And it's how I manage my power right now and how I manage the time on getting it out and the time it takes to do it. It doubled when I lost the internet. The last time, and now it's about tripling. It's going to take more time, almost 3 days, not days fully, but times in the day where I have to break down the process of bringing the broadcast to you. So I just want to give you I should have said this up front. I apologize. I will try every week to bring the broadcast. And if it doesn't, please accept whatever Redneck Dennis presents in the time slot for us as he schedules that for us. I'm trying to figure this out. I'll try to solve it as quickly as possible. I've been trying to solve it. It's tied to we've got that mining claim I need to sell. That would help fix all this. That's what I thought was agreed upon. There is no word that now I can rely on, no honor in the word that I can rely on that isn't retaliated against quickly, which has been the life I've been living for probably 6-8 months now. And so, I don't know what more to say than I apologize if the broadcast doesn't come each week. I'm going to try and do that, and we'll see how long this lasts this way with the demand that's on me now that I've got to do the side case to try and stop it and to correct it for the future while I'm attempting to escape from the problem. And I better just stop right there. Thank you for your patience on this as I move this through. So back to this, hate, feel terrorized, frightened, or threatened is not enough. We just heard that last court case. So I don't know what Michigan's going to do. We heard lots of garbage coming out of Michigan anyway. These are the type of people, though, that are being behavior and how people feel about the world, whether or not it's reality and law, it doesn't matter. We're watching that come through right now, and that last court case, relative to behavior is not enough, should just take this right out. I don't even know how these laws are getting where they are, actually. But you have voted people in, maybe the corporations are voting too, into offices that have no clue anymore relative to even most basic things in law. Like even this thing with the intent is required for doing the harm. So they make stuff up. And so this is I've been talking about this behavioral stuff, be feeling this, feeling that is no good. It's the future they want, but the laws of the United States and this Supreme Court decision is one little part showing that those foreign laws that try to force behavior, and like Kanukistan, Trudeau thinks that the absence of an action is a bullying, an action is an action. These folks have a time that's coming for them. We just have to stand strong, and we can't let people like in Michigan do this. And we can use that court case. Those of you in Michigan can use that court case and nail this thing and get it out of the way. So it doesn't put somebody into a violation, and then they have to go to the Supreme Court and be lucky to get in. So I guess part of my hope in all this was if I could start explaining a bit of this. I'm trying to keep it as accurate as possible. You would understand this in a summary way. Go look inside and stop the harm that's coming on all of us if you have an acumen for it. Be that part, that way, that place. Not everybody will do this in any place, but to do nothing universally gets this nonsense where that guy before has to go to the Supreme Court. Luckily, he gets in, and they say, oh, yeah, behavior's not enough to cause someone to have a conviction in crime. You need intent. Everybody knows that. Or do we? I'm embarrassed, actually, on that last case. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We have to understand it going ahead. And I'm appreciative for as much as I would diss the Bar Association. I'm sure that I would have to assume, maybe wrongly here, that gentleman had a counterman, has an attorney. And power to that. Power to the fact that he has an attorney that knew that and stuck with it. And so we could use those guys. We could use those people to help us. But those types of people seem to be so far and few in between for us through the Bar Association. I'd like to believe they're there as our champions. I'd like to believe the Esquire actually meant knight, you know, or actually be a knight's helper, isn't it? It's not even the knight, the Esquire. So the point being that we have a lot of people that are in so-called law. We got people in legislative capacities making law. They're not even lawyers. A lot of them are. And they make this garbage. And someone has to go to the Supreme Court under the felony, under the penalty of a felony, if at least one, on something that's not applicable to what they did. I mean, that's just my main gripe. Started to understand. I was moved into why you challenge your stuff before you make a plea in any allegation, even in an administrative sense, if I can bullet out just a little bit further. Before they can make any, their first notice is where you attack them for the jurisdiction, for the correctness of the application. You have to even challenge the law if you can. In this case, that was what they did. They challenged that behavior is not enough for criminal outcomes. The civil is between parties. The civil is different. But for the state to get involved to incarcerate somebody under the due process, they can't do it for crime without an intent. And behavior isn't enough. You can act out all you want. I'm asking you not to. Don't act out. Act out, I guess, if you have to. But In this case, it required more than someone aggressively typing their things on their keyboard. I would say with that, you just walk away from it. Block them. You have that power on your side. But you can't, don't expect it to be a crime. And I say that, I think that's a good thing. I don't think that we should be going after people that are, just because they get, you know, they can type fast or whatever, the big cap letters, that all of a sudden that becomes some sort of a crime. That boy, that's a dangerous thing. Another crime that I was talking about last week, and I was privately injured, if you will, in the last broadcast, in a way, a hate for what happened, the consequences of what happens, the circumstance of my life relative to being so well derailed by affirmative action, relative, it was essentially reverse racism. And here's the point. It's not about black and white. I've already told you we're all colored under the law. The fact that when you go into that stuff where you're taking benefit, you're colored because of that. But it's because they chose it by a color instead of by a bunch of parameters that did not include color unless there was a super reason for it. Any color or colorless, whatever. there's a reverse discrimination. I've got a couple of cases that are pointing, we're finding to see a balance coming back. Again, I don't even know why this becomes an issue. I don't know why color comes up. I don't know why someone's religious beliefs come up. Those are not supposed to be used as a flag to beat someone else with. And yet we see the cancel culture use it all the time. And yet when it's challenged right, we see the end. Well, I'm glad to hear in this report here, majority of U.S. citizens back Supreme Court's ending of race-based college admissions. So I wasn't the only one. There's some of us that got hurt, if you will. I believe I was victimized by a law that sat around for 50 years and was wrong the whole time. To me, I don't even know, still don't know why it was a question. How do you prefer for on the color alone? And I don't, it could be the Asian people, and they were the one that sued here. They were discriminated against on this. Even black people, color of skin now, just their color of their skin, they were saying they didn't even like it. Some did, some didn't. Point was, it's against the law generally. You don't do that for any reason, any color. And so I guess that kind of, from my mind, brings up more of a merit-based thing. You just do your merit. You do what you can to succeed. It's what you're, what it's there for, if you will. You succeed by exceeding to the bars that they, you know, the high bar, not the drinking bar. But the majority of people in the United States agree with the United States Supreme Court's decision to end race-based, I call it race-baiting, race-based college admissions, while its decisions on student loan forgiveness and free speech produced a divided public opinion. I like this story because it goes through and analyzes these different stories that came out from the Supreme Court. On how people view them each and their why. And that was pretty interesting to watch an analysis do it. But the thing about for me was it was good to see, not a lot. It wasn't like a gobs and gobs extra that liked it, maybe just over half. And then within the pool they asked, it was a little better than half over that, maybe two-thirds better in the pool that answered. The point being that race is not a factor, I guess is the thing. It can be. It's not a thing, I'll tell you that. There's a thing. What I'm saying is when you make a decision on a government benefit or anything, it's not to be. And when you make any of those things so-called race-based, you know, sexual orientation, all that, and it makes it the singular thing that makes a decision and derogatory to everybody else, that's reverse racism. Certainly adverse racism. It's not supposed to be what we put on a pedestal to give better rights to. And of the people that responded, more than half in this, you'll see, agree. And I'm happy to see that because I don't know that this country really is racist that way. And I thought we got beyond all that. And with all this stuff we've been watching coming down, the universities and cancel culture, it's like, where did we go as a nation? And where we went was we allowed behavior to be a cause of action. And the suggestion of a behavior impose a criminal liability on people. And the Supreme Court just came out and said, no, you don't do it that way. That's not what it is. And it wasn't like that was a new concept. But that's the other thing that bothers me. So those of us that are out here looking at this and agreed that that was a good one, I thank you very much. And in the comments, what I read on this link, I found it interesting. Someone took it a little bit farther than me. It came in my thoughts, but I didn't want to dare say it. I don't know why. I think it's partly a joke, but it was asked by the races that were taking advantage and saying that they were being harmed. And someone in there, you look at the link and you go to the comments. It was Elza Tate comments. Now we need billions in reparations for these decades of discriminations. Unlike blacks, we actually lived this racist abuse. And that's essentially what I was telling you. I just didn't go to the point of saying, no, I want my reparations, which if I asked it, it would be more of the joke, because I don't think, somehow I don't think reparations is a viable thing anyway. It's a harm. I said, you're not going to make it right. Money's not going to make it right. But that's what the other side does, and so why not? I thought that was a cool insight. She came up with it, and why not? If we're all into this victimization, whites, or even, I think it was the Asians that sued, the Asian people, we all got harmed. And this is a recent group of people that came up and said, instead of years and years and decades ago, those of us through my classes in years coming. Our lives were derailed by all this. Completely thrown under. And so, yeah, I want my reparations. I guess I can go along with it. But it, I thought this was more of a joke, but I thought it was important to lay, as Elsa Tate comes right out and says, you know, if there's gonna, they're going to ask for it, we should be asking for it. And you start to realize that the whole society is just this big victim. And then the other problem is they think that the reparations they get in bucks is going to solve a thing. And it's just a bigger debt hole that you're making everywhere. And you're victimizing more people to have that reparation for your victimization. And this thing should have been stopped 50 years ago. And so I'm going to maybe say something here. We have a responsibility as people to stop it now, not wait 50 years, not allow it to be waiting 50 years. I guess that's my gripe, if I have the gripe this way. We've been doing that as a people. We're not practicing it. I attempt here to tell you how to get practice quick for you, like Kobe Swindle, how to get right in that so they don't affect you. They don't cause you to come 50 years later, so I want reparations. As right as that may sound, it may be. I can sure use reparations for my life being derailed, but isn't it going to bring that life back? No. Oh, speaking of my back, is it going to fix my back when I wouldn't have been there? No. Is it going to work when I was aspiring in my best skills and an intention to get someplace? No. None of that. All that's gone. None of that gets back with cash. So we should work ahead of time that we don't ask for reparations because no one's getting hurt like that. We step up and stop it. We don't let behavior get a guy to go to the Supreme Court to say, oh, no, no, we don't, you know, you need intent. No, we don't let that happen. That was a short course. But this, these 50-year-old violations that the Supreme Court lets go on and our societies let go on are a travesty of justice. Travesty of justice. We're never going to get it back. And so speaking to this cancel culture and their claim and feeling field terrorizing and all this is another case that came up. Consider as a title here, I blow to LGBTQ rights. I'm going to have to say up front, so I don't interrupt the conversation a bit here as I move through it, that these are were not LGBTQ rights to allow to interfere. And this is the problem with this contra-culture look and referral review that speaks to us. There is no LGBTQ cancel rights to be greater than our ability to do things on our conscience says that it should be done or to abstain from doing those things. And these last few cases are pretty getting us back into a more normal thought about what comes first and immediately. We don't have to have a challenge. In this case, the 303 Creative LLC versus Elenis, the sixth of the nine justices sided with a wedding website designer who wanted to be able to refuse to make web pages for weddings of same-sex couples based on her belief as a Christian that the same-sex relationships are immoral. Colorado law forbade such a practice. She challenged the law in court. I'm going to have to interject. It didn't hit me here when I read it until right now. Here again, Colorado. There's something in the water about Colorado. Right? So over there in Colorado, you got a lot of work to do. These folks have got in like ticks. There's people getting harmed, and it appears by this tale that some other people have rights that are being trampled, but it's not. This lady now here is going to be shown that she had her rights trampled. You can't make a law like that. You can't affect someone's conscience that way. You have a right to religion is a right to religious your beliefs as well. You use those beliefs to go make your First Amendment speech as well. Your speech should be received by people. Someone may not like what you say, but it's not a crime. It's not something you can have a reason for being in the world to cause a trouble, which seems to be a ton of what goes on in so-called cancel culture with these behavioral modification programs that go on to get the future they want and they get everybody compliant. So Colorado law forbade such a practice, like Colorado law was a cyberstalker problem. So she challenged the law in court. Colorado seeks to force an individual to speak in ways that align with its views but defy her conscience about a matter of major significance, wrote Justice Neil Gorsuch in the majority opinion, adding that those opposed to same-sex marriage were entitled to tolerance as well. Trudeau. I don't want to use those links. I'm not a bully. But this is pretty, I mean, just thinking about that, it's a fascinating issue. The opportunity to think for ourselves and express those thoughts freely is among our most cherished liberties and part of what keeps our republic strong. You see democracy there, folks? This is so refreshing in a way. It keeps our republic strong. The democracy going into the stinking abyss. The republic keeps strong by keeping these principles. He continued, of course, abiding the constitutional commitment to the freedom of speech means all of us will encounter ideas we consider unattractive, misguided, or even hurtful. But tolerance, not coercion, is our nation's answer. Doesn't that sound nice? Well, that's the law. And this is how that's supposed to work. But we're not supposed to have such thin skin, and it doesn't give us a reason for being to be violated. We don't have that right. So it's not an LGBTQ right that's been stomped on. They never had that. And this is what where these people get. They get a voice, and they get some importance that way, and no one shuts it all down. I don't mean physically. There's just a no right there. There's no right to claim. You want to talk to preach tolerance? They want to teach inclusion? Yeah, this is that lesson. It's the real lesson. It's what we should have been talking about all the time so that this stuff didn't rise up to cause division in our nation. In a way, I have a real, almost abiding anger because I hear people talking about different colored people. And okay, aside, we're all colored by the law. We're colored by this taint. I have told you, 42 USC 1981, but move that aside. In my life, and I'm not saying that there aren't, there's bad people across the board. In my life, I have never approached a people by their color. I mean, there's some I have role models, if you will. The woman, I've talked to her about it before, Pamela Hackett. We call her the Hatchet. I'd get in a foxhole in a war with her. Well, she's the late Pamela Hackett. She died a few years ago. I'd jump in a foxhole with her in a second and against a common enemy. She'd bring out her hatchet and just chop everybody. Her family, black family, her husband, great, great people. Kids, great. She didn't look at color either. We were all in the same group. We all came together from that. It's never been about that. It's about justice for people. That's what she was about. That's what we were about. Watching and being vigilant. And so we have to move from this cancel culture, which wants to divide us, into the fundamental principles of what we want for everyone. We can talk colorblindness, but I don't know if that's even relevant. I'm not here for that. There's an injustice going on, and we've got to fix that amongst ourselves. And I think they call it common ground. I think we have enough between us that we can make up the things that we need as they say, find the things that don't divide us and bring those us together. I was with a group, I can't remember now, it was a trade thing, I don't remember. I was 2 weeks worth of training or something from Ohio. Happened to be with a group of guys from Ohio. We had, I don't remember the name of the black guys from the city, but the white guys were the plowboys. And this is a known thing in Ohio. I know nothing about it, but the plowboys would have a Saturday night thing they did. They'd go into the town. And the black guys in the town, they'd meet up and they'd have their little fights and altercations and the horrendous stories of fights that they would do. I didn't understand it. Well, I'm in a motel. They put the black guys together from Ohio and they put the white plowboys in their room. And I heard there was lots of animosity and they were only separated by a couple of doors. Well, I was the odd man out. And so they put the guy from the west with the black guys from Ohio somewhere. I can't remember now the city. Well, after listening to the guys, you know, where they get sleeping arrangements and all, I started to listen to the plowboys and what they were talking about. I noticed that they had a lot in common. They did a lot of things that they each didn't know they each did in common. And after a couple of days, I was hearing, I think it was first the biggest plowboy, and boy, this kid was big. He started talking. I go, you know that guy? And I couldn't remember all their names. I said, you know that kid? He was another, the other big kid who happened to be black. And interesting how they were correlating. I said, you know that he does the same thing as you did, but he does it over here? And then I threw out a little bitty thing that the kid had said and about specialty. And he goes, oh, yeah? I go, yeah, I think you need to talk with him. You guys have a commonality. And I went through a couple of days. I didn't like this animosity. It made the air thick, I can just tell you. And after the first week, we had these guys, they were all, it was really, got really loud because they were talking. They weren't yelling. They were finding they had a lot more in common, if you will, a lot more interests that they didn't know about each other. By the end of the second week, they were inviting each other into their section of town or out to the farm. And the big joke was, oh, you'll be okay. And that was a joke, you know, but no, it was real. So my view in the world was, if you look carefully, we're really not divided. We only divide ourselves. I don't know why, even know why I went down that story, because I didn't even know more of the details. But it was just something that it didn't need, the animosity against us because of color was really non-existent, actually. Were they all the same? No. Did they have the right same ideas? Did they hold grudges? Yeah, that was still there, but we could all work through it. And that's what these cancel culture mentalities do, is to divide us. They bring up behavioral ideas and concepts instead of factual things that we need to focus on, other than the color of our skin, what our sexual orientation is, what we religiously believe. That should just empower us to be where we need to be to do the help, the mutual help. I kind of got way off the line here, but yeah, there's a, looking at it through these eyes of color or LGBT, you don't have rights. That's not where your rights are. If I have to say it's a right, you have a right to help each other, to not be oppressed by those things. And being oppressed by those things, Orwellian Ministry of Truth busted. Judge bars Biden officials agency from contacting social media companies. For those of you that are the guy, a counterman, you've got the capital letters going against your Facebook. Well, the Orwellian Truth Ministry are maybe not going to be able to be there behind your back. In your little laptop camera to see who it is that's doing that right now, in an order issued on an Independence Day. Boy, do I have to say, I don't think we're independent, folks. That's a two words, I-N and dependence. And our people in America do not really understand that. But at any rate, we celebrate it because we feel good. Happy, happy, joy, joy. In an order fittingly issued Independence Day, a federal judge in Louisiana has forbidden multiple federal agency and named officials from having any contact with social media companies with the intent to moderate content. This is free speech, folks. They weren't supposed to be there in the beginning. Why this is even out here is embarrassing to me, to even have to report that we had a judge that said that, and the people that were in the agency just didn't do it in the beginning. Shows you how far gone we are. Then you find out the military's involved. Shows you how much further gone we are. Then you know the military came from the Lincoln and the more perfect union. Maybe not for us. What did I just say? Those that don't believe me, I don't know why people don't. I don't know why I don't have a flood of emails every time I say this. Go to 42 USC 1981 and see what your rights is. What your equal rights for everyone is. And it's not what you think. And yet, we have a judge say, no, government, you can't go in there. Preliminary injunction arises from the suit filed by the states of Missouri, and Louisiana, along with individuals that include two leading critics of the COVID-19 lockdown regime, Harvard's Martin Kulldorff and Stanford's Jay Bhattacharya, and Jim Hoft, who owns a right-wing website, Gateway Pundit. If the allegations made by the plaintiffs are true, the present case arguably involves the most massive attack against free speech in United States history, wrote United States Judge Terry A. Doty. The plaintiffs are likely to succeed on the merits, establishing that the government has used its power to silence the opposition. That there was even an opposition is a problem for me, but fine enough. There shouldn't have been an opposition because the law should have been filed, and there's no opposition to that, and that said we were in the wrong room. None of us should have been there. I've talked about all this. I won't go there. Here, First Amendment. I didn't even realize that I'm talking about all this First Amendment stuff this time as I read through this. Shouldn't have even been a question. It took a judge to shut down an agency. It showed you how bad our government is. We shouldn't even be coming close to approaching that as a government to our, those, at least the four, the First Amendment of the Federal Constitution, and then you'll have yours in your state. Start there. But the Orwellian Ministry of Truth is shut down until they get caught again. That's another problem. This is why it takes our vigilance to keep that republic. And it's not that complicated. So this is the other thing I saw with that you have to tolerate. It's not that complicated. We have a right to speech. We're going to be insulted at times. Not everything for all things, but we may be insulted and we just have to tolerate that. That's not a crime. That's not a reason for causing riots and burning things and whatever. You don't have rights that you don't have. You don't have rights because you believe you have rights, but you don't have. And this is the other thing that goes on. A lot of our actions as people move too quick before a court will come along and make that decision for us. And we don't have the Bar Association, but we don't have the legal system, the law system, that will aggressively go after that as they practice on themselves about this and argue and debate those things. And it would be neat in public, too, instead of the way they do it now. And so there's a time coming here. I guess they've said it's a pendulum swinging. We're talking about things that the First Amendment is not on a pendulum. Okay, that's the thing I guess I'm getting at. Don't make arguments. I keep telling all the folks I work with, don't make arguments. Find the principle and stay there. And you're going to find out that's the bright line, and you'll find out how quickly your government's corrupt. In all these ways, it takes these few judges that come along that, I don't know if they were embarrassed because it was such a simple answer, but you look how far it goes, that it went at all, or the other case goes to the Supreme Court before the simple answer comes out. Why? Well, I get to say our society is that ignorant. We didn't hold it for ourselves. I'm not saying I did early on. I'm not saying I'm completely doing it now. But we're a society that just generally doesn't do it. And then we make up stuff. We feel our opinions more important, as we're seeing lots of people's feelings are important about, you know, their sexual orientation or whatever. It's not. You don't have rights because you have those feelings. And if you look carefully, those of you that do the research on the U.S. United States Code, it's really hard to find something you can use out of that. It's really to protect the government. That code protects the government. Understand, most all of that code's a commercial code, too. These criminal codes are commercial codes. And that's out of Admiralty. That's out of the Benedict on Admiralty information. And some people have asked me, I'm sorry, I got my information out of a library in a university. Law library, specifically for that. It happened to be there. I happened to be, if you will, directed to that book. It's an encyclopedic set. And I found myself standing in front of it, wondering why I was standing there. But my hand went up and I grabbed the first volume somewhere down one-third of the way up, and I started reading. A week later, I had about four or five volumes left, and something told me you've seen enough. I've told you this before. So it became very important. It's been somewhat pivotal whether or not I can fully remember it all. But you'll find in there that penal statutes are the criminal statutes requiring intent, criminal intent, an evil intent, or whatever standard. And they're commercial. So that's kind of interesting when you find that out. What kind of a nation do you live in? House and Senate bills aim to protect journalists' data from government surveillance. Shouldn't be a point. But I've told you, as we're coming into this time, you're going to have to get laws that you thought were normal for you, for rights, for being justice right up front, that you're going to have to put them in writing in order to secure them for you today, because you also see that it takes 50 years to get it corrected when it's not. Here this is. You'd think that the government could not, in good faith, touch a journalist's information. But a law has to be made to make sure that everybody knows that, is what I've been talking about. I don't like this. I'm not saying that everyone should need to roll up into your sleeves and do we got to do this, but we got to do this. Somebody's got to step up and make these laws that it's okay for you to do things that were okay to do. And it's not okay for the government to do things that it's been thinking it could be done, that it's okay to do. When we see clearly it's not that big a principle to figure out, oh no, crime requires intent, not just behavior. Free speech is a number one thing. It stands and it takes a lot to take it out. Those should not be questions. That they are is our problem. That we're in a day that I've been telling you for a decade or so that this would be what they're doing normal stuff we all thought was supposed to go on. You think the the right of the press and the free speech and the right to associate in that amendment isn't all built into this, that it's having to be put back in statutory law now? It shows you how messed up this country is. House and Senate bills aim to protect journalists' data from government surveillance. Officials couldn't force reporters to turn over data which might reveal their sources. When did that become an option anyway? But here it is. And don't underestimate what's happening over the pond in the EU. They're sucking this stuff up. They're actually making counter to all this, it seems. News gatherers in the U.S. may soon have safeguards. No, we don't even have them now, apparently, by this reporter. Why? We don't need a statutory right. We have it in the Constitution. It's not being recognized. Oh, so we need to have safeguards now, which is totally wrong. But we do need them because there's a complete obliteration of law up front, good faith, applied by people holding oaths of office to protect us with those laws. Yes, we're not in the country that we thought we were, Toto. News gatherers in the U.S. may soon have safeguards against government attempts to comb through their data. Bipartisan House and Senate groups have introduced legislation, the PRESS Act, protect reporters from exploitive state spying that limits the government's ability to compel data disclosures that might identify journalist sources. The Senate bill would extend disclosure exemptions and standards to cover email, phone records, and other info third parties hold. I'll stop there. You can read more. I'm shocked, embarrassed. Why is this here? Well, because we have no more people in the government that recognize it until it's in black and white. In a law, like I've told you, was coming. The most simple things that we thought were precious in the Constitution and protected aren't. I don't know how a statutory power comes more powerful than the First Amendment and even the amendments in your states for the very same principles, but apparently we're in that day, just like I told you was coming. How did I know that? I don't know, but I told you, you just read far enough, you see lots of this coming. It's because you have failed judiciary. You have failed officials. They're guided by the Bar Association advisors called attorneys that every corporation needs. You have people that come from foreign interests, foreign and domestic enemies that bring in sustainable things, processes that advance that in a way that actually makes it in, and then we all are too stupid to figure out and not told either in our so-called education, our inculcation system, to understand what these basics really do. We put them into specialists that are the ones that are gatekeepers, that are the ones that are our jailers that we don't even understand. Bipartisan bill plans to force data brokers to delete your private info when requested. Bipartisan bill, again, it's pretty interesting that we're getting some bipartisan power here, even though we hear a lot of division. And I'm not saying I embrace all this. We shouldn't see this, but here we have it. Bipartisan bill. We have both parties, both unions, both political unions. They can pick and choose what they want, whoever they want to bring forward, but to force data brokers to delete your info. I keep reading that because I want you to think about something. I think this is the Delete Act. Yeah, the Delete Act when you see it. This is how they get it wrong too. How about don't collect any data without formal consent? How about that? How about we just try that? How about you just outlaw any data that you haven't got a writing and signatures five times deep with all full disclosure? You don't have that, you're guilty of a crime. How about if we do it that way first? Why is it that they get to collect this stuff and it's on there on good honor? Like the law had to be made because they're not good. They don't have any good honor, but the law makes them honorable. But they can keep your data when they got it ahead of time, that you have to now go and say you don't have the right to use that, and we can believe that, and we had to suffer until we did do that. Why don't we just, why is this law written like this? Is the same reason why I'm having trouble with the WHO treaty, so-called, and letting senators discuss it, because it's not in the Fed, and it's not over in the WHO, the WHO, not the rock group, the OWL, or the little people from WHOville. It's in your state local official, and the WHO, the World Health Organization, has nothing to say about it. The feds have nothing to say about it. Why are you talking to the WHO at all as a senator? Is the same problem right here. Why don't you just make a law that if there's data collected without the formal and full disclosure of what the data is, that it was going to be taken, that you cannot take it? Let's write a law like that. How about we just don't collect anything without a formal consent? How about we do that? Please. Can we start voicing stuff like that. I'm just throwing one out there. There's dozens. House Republicans consider plans to defund WHO misinformation, policing, and surveillance. Why is this even having to be up as a law? And yet here it is, and they do need it because you saw no law. You saw the evidence. There's no local law that protects you. All the officials are derelict, and that's a bad word. Talk about bad things. That's one. You don't want your officials derelict, and everyone in every jurisdiction globally were wrong. The United States House Committee on Appropriations has floated a budget proposal that, if passed, would axe government funding for the World Health Organization. Right? And they suggest here there's a lot more of this opinion going on, and I'm suggesting for you to maybe support it. Jump in, and this is how that gets work. You stop the appropriation, it's done. Nothing in the government can operate. All right? You have to understand that, again, this whole, even this corrupt fiat system, will cease to function once you stop paying for it. And we have I want to roll down to the paragraph here that seemed important, because it's important relative to what I'm saying about all of this, these authorities. During this time, when they were looking at this through the subcommittee, through this whole WHO treaty thing, the United States Department of Health and Human Services held sessions concerning the WHO's proposed pandemic treaty and international health regulations amendments, witnessing vociferous opposition from experts and activists. I'll just stop right there, I think. Opinions, vociferous or not, have no authority to exist where your health relative to the local health communicable disease law is concerned. Their opinions have no authority, and yet they're entertained by the federal government that has no authority. Because this train is off the rails and going far, fast over the hill. As I keep showing you, they can set this thing up and make it look like there's authority, and none of them have a right to have a speech. The WHO is an existential threat to the American health law, disposing all determinations pursuant to lawful due process to the state authorities to protect people. What's the feds doing with this? Well, the feds do have to look out off the country. They're the ones that represent the states, the states, relative to the United States government's total interaction with the Fed foreign government, so they can look out at those treaties. But the health authority we're talking reserved to the states is behind the Senate as they look out. It's not out there coming in. What's out there should never be brought in. Again, no authority. The opinions that were vociferous or not relative to any discussion on this WHO treaty have no authority whatsoever in the United States of America. As I've explained in that Health Regulation 2005 and the Reservation of the United States saying what I'm saying. It's in the Constitution. It's not what I said. It's not what they said. And so we have the proof. We have the fact that we shouldn't even be talking about that. Yes, there should be no appropriations. It says there's quite a few people pushing for no appropriations. Why don't you be one of those if you feel important? This is important. Jump in and be one of those people. Offer more. Stop, cut all this funding out that where you can find a clear problem relative to the authorities that are in law, back in black and white. So Congress heavy in the discussion here in the themes today, taking action. I'm kind of glad to see it, but I'm also showing you that it shouldn't be, had to be taken. If law was ruling and people were faithful to their oaths and watched government and presumed people innocent and presumed that they were protected, not presume that they were extortable as the civil right allows you, your equal rights, the one that you're all of us are colored under the law about, unless you know a couple of answers and you show that you're not. I better throw that out there because there is a limit to it. Congress doubles down on explosive claims of illegal UFO retrieval programs. The very interesting story. I don't know where to jump in on this one. But guess what? We talked about their interview with Rubio, exclusive interview. Rubio, was it Mark Rubio, told the News Nation, a Washington correspondent Joe Khalil, that multiple individuals with, quote, very high clearances and high positions within our government have come forward to share firsthand UFO-related claims beyond the realm of what the Senate Intelligence Committee has ever dealt with. Rubio's comments provide context for a bipartisan provision adopted unanimously by the Senate Intelligence Committee which would immediately halt the funding for any secret government or contract or efforts to retrieve a for a contractor's efforts to retrieve and reverse engineer craft or non-Earth or exotic origin. This extraordinary language added to the Senate version of the intelligence authorization bill mirrors and adds significant credibility to a whistleblower's recent stunning allegations that a clandestine, decades-long effort to recover, analyze, and exploit objects of non-human origin has been operating illegally without congressional oversight. Let me just stop there. This is an intriguing story. But is it real? Is this the type of disclosure they were talking about? Are they real? Is this happening? I cannot tell you. I have my experiences with so-called something that I was flying that I could not identify. In fact, I think over at Suspect Sky, the latest video, around 25 minutes in, 11 seconds, there's a craft that I saw, but it was running backwards. It was flying backwards a long time ago. And it was that craft I saw in that little video. Kind of interesting. It was flying backwards when I saw it. It was going from right to left. The pointy side was to the left, going to the left. And so I've seen things that I couldn't identify. It happened to look like that over there at Suspect Sky's latest little video about those. About 25 minutes in, you may want to look at it. I'm just letting you know, I mean, there's things we see. Do we know what they are? No. But this statement that they have intelligence behind, is this a setup? Is this the so-called disclosure? If we're going to cut funding into something that's supposedly going on that may not be going on, if it is going on, how are you going to know? What if it goes into black budget? They have a reason for why they want to do this. They want to kind of make this more public so there's more, the reverse engineering isn't done in the secret. Even if Congress says so, the military is going to pick up all that stuff that's dangerous to or a threat to national security. You're not going to know about it. If you think that this corporation of the United States of America doesn't obliterate patents that should be coming out because they have a national security interest, you need to go read the patent law and see the exception. If you think you have a really good idea and it's a really, really, really good idea and the government thinks it's a national, they can use it for the military and or it's a national security threat, it won't come out. Anyway, this is very interesting, this story. They're doubling down, they say. Got very big information. Pretty neat. But what's this all about? I don't know. Doubling down for what? Keeping things for what? Against the known obstruction that goes on that keeps them dark. I don't know. But are they slowly creeping out to tell us that there's aliens out there and craft and things? I noticed a lot more of those stories recently. I'm tending to not want to get... I don't want to step in that direction quite yet. I'm actually stepping back. I'm not so sure about that we're telling the truth. We're being told the truth. No different in a way that I don't think, and maybe this is where it starts to come from, but we're not going to ever be given the right information for the Kennedy assassination. That's, you understand, there's an exception to this. There's always an exception to the most important information. In fact, I think the decision was just made to release some more or certify it or whatever, but it had an exception right there in the news article. Other things of unknown origin and space and sky and all, we're going to get back into that little bitty story that we talked about, flying balloons. Pentagon admits Chinese spy balloon did not collect data during U.S. overflight. 5 months after accusing China of dispatching a spy balloon across U.S. airspace and producing another rift in U.S.-China relations, Washington has quietly admitted that the balloon neither collected or transmitted any data during its several-day trip across the U.S. Remember, one of those interventions was $1 million worth of missiles being set off, one that missed. What an embarrassment. Nothing. What do they call that? A nothing burger? A UFO? What we'll call it? A space balloon. They did that at Roswell, didn't they? Aren't these stories kind of coming together? Isn't it kind of neat? I'd like to believe, folks. I'm kind of tired of liking to believe, but, you know, who cares? I mean, they think there's a big problem. If they tell you there's extraterrestrial life, all of a sudden your religions go to heck, and all of a sudden you don't know what to do, and you're going to cause chaos. I don't know, folks. I think it's fantastic stuff in technology, and if there is all that, if when you put your mind out and you think about that, there's technology in the world, in the universe, that it must be just fantastic stuff. It makes us, what we do, look like monkeys. Well, we are, aren't we? Humans. At any rate, cool, huh? No, these balloons, they weren't doing anything, apparently. The Pentagon finally admits it. Why did they take so long? Again, they use it for propaganda. They use it to keep the question. They then quietly pass the truth, and then the society moves on. Now, I'm not so sure either. I don't know. It was a Chinese balloon. I don't know what they were really doing. Did you? No, I don't know. I don't know what it was about. What game's being played here? Remember, they made a lot of mistakes and insulted China over the left. Blinken, the idiot. Blinken, idiot. He come back over and said, yeah, the guy's a dictator. We might be seeing actually some capitulation to, oh, yeah, it wasn't a Chinese balloon. We give you on that, Uncle Sam, we're done. And we're going to get back to working with China, because we're causing more trouble like we're doing against Russia, and the hurricane's going to come back on us. The people are toying with China. I think they've come a long way. I wouldn't trust their manufacturing necessarily. We ordered some excavator rollers from China. Forget it. We had to get them twice. Ridiculous manufacturing quality. However, you put up with what you can put up with. However, they're coming along. They're making some fantastic things anymore. The big issue now is the chips. I could do tons of stories on chip manufacturing, chips, microchips, as we're moving into the time when technocracy needs them. I think you're slapping China in the chops, and you better not. And the corporations are already saying, listen, China's indispensable now. Well, who did that? I think that was the Clintons, right? Bill Clinton started to do this globalization thing, and now it's going to come and slap us in the face if we become, well, too exceptional. And I think we're kind of riding that. But getting to the military, thinking that a balloon that we find out waiting, they stand there stupid, don't tell us, thinking that it was a threat, shooting it down, sounds kind of insane. And the story comes out, U.S. now, we might find out why, U.S. Air Defense Forces overstretched, understaffed, need psychologists. So we've just admitted that our military is insane. It's got some mental defect going on. U.S. Air Defense Forces. Can you imagine the people on the missiles, folks, the nuclear missiles? U.S. Air Defense Forces are overstretched and understaffed due to extensive foreign presence, while personnel need psychological help to keep up with the workload, American media reported on Sunday, citing officers. Quote, we have been overworked and undermanned, one senior air defense officer who spoke on condition of anonymity was quoted as saying. Another quote, we have more missions than we have air defense capability. Space and Missile Defense Commander Dan Garble recalled an officer telling him, as quoted in the report. Wow, that's a serious report. Psychologists, and we got military on these buttons. Somehow, the balloon becomes a little bit more understandable. Pentagon reveals military suicide numbers. New report shows a 25% increase by active duty troops. This is not the vets now. And this is not a joke, folks. This is a serious problem. I kind of go dry jokes as I go along. I'm not a comedian, but I go from a little bit of a faux pas, what we're seeing here, and the psychologists and the buttons and the balloons. There's a real problem. And I wonder where that comes from, but our society itself, and then the Pentagon, what it does, what these folks, what these guys and gals learn, what they stresses they put on, the injections for no good reason either, no law there. And even if it's military, they had to follow a standard. They have that standard, the same one that they all follow. The new report shows 25% increase by active U.S. troops, America's military suicide crisis, called a suicide crisis, folks. Shows no signs of easing as active duty U.S. soldiers killed themselves at a rate of more than one per day in this year, first quarter, up 25% from 2022's pace, and a new Pentagon report says. Guess I can just stop there. Let's go back to the other story right before it. U.S. Air Defense Forces overstretched, understaffed, need psychologists. I wonder what their medication's about, too. Folks, we have a serious problem. It's not even fixed in the military that is running the joke against you on COVID swindle. It's amazing how failed this country is becoming. I don't really know why. I don't know this insanity that sits there working like it's normal. When did this come out? Why? What's going on? So, this is a serious issue. My hats off to any of you service folks that have a problem. Please talk with people. Go find some help here. If you're overstaffed, I don't know what you do about that, but don't let that ruin your life. Go find the help that you need. I hope we're talking to somebody here behind the woodshed. We need to be understand that there's trouble in the world. Don't take it on ourselves. Go seek help. Go talk with people. Find people you trust and see if you can work it out. Sometimes it's tough. I've never been in that capacity that deep that I couldn't work myself back out of the dark, if you will. But this is a travesty. They already realize it's a crisis. So we're surrounded by crisis, it seems, and I'm not sure that that's not a plan either. Moving on here from that serious issue to more insanity, craziness, and a joke. Hello, Ice Age. Internet dazed as Biden administration toys with the plan to block the sunlight. I've been reporting that the EU was saying they wanted to do it. They wanted to build a block. Well, here, the United States is working with them too. Do you think that there's maybe a global plan to pull this off like they did with the COVID swindle? Hello, Ice Age. Well, maybe so, folks. I told you in the 70s, I know it's a joke because, oh, they went to global warming. Go look closely at the stories that were written about the Ice Age. They actually had, this is before they were doing this nonsense with the consensus. They actually had scientific observations that were looking to predict it. And guess what? They didn't deny the sun. They were in a cyclic condition that they looked and they estimated based on this. By 2030, we would start to see things. And I told you, a new report came up here just a couple years ago. They had moved that time. There's a real scientist looking at this, and they said, oh, we have to adjust this. And they may push it further back. It actually expanded it. It could be starting into it now, even though we've got all this heat, it may be expanding, and they may be pushing it back to the 2050 or something. But the thing they've been looking at all these years, it still sits there. We're not into it yet. See, there's cycles. So I don't know if it does or doesn't. I've been intrigued. I wanted to see if that was right. But it was based on things, the physical science of the Earth, not this consensus nonsense. Previously, billionaire Bill Gates advocated an idea of using techniques that block a portion of the sun or the solar radiation reaching our planet, and backed a Harvard University experiment to look at the effect of spraying reflective particles and cooling the stratosphere in hopes of creating a global cooling. U.S. President Joe Biden administration, and I don't know if these guys, this is administration, it's not him, so maybe it's not his dementia, but the Joe Biden administration, Feeblenomics, appears to be flirting with the idea, flirting, folks, like a girlfriend, a future girlfriend, of a study into whether blocking the sun's rays could be used to slow global warming. Can I stop here again? Right there they admit. It admits that man is not the culprit from the heat provided by the sun's proponents of anthropomorphic global warming deny. This proves insanity and the sustainable adherence that we listen to all the time. Feel good, feel scared, feel fear, feel terrified, people. Failing also to disclose that climate change isn't about weather, but politics. The political climate is what they're doing with this. It's a big swindle. And so the sun is trying to be blocked. Well, if man did it, we'd be blocking man, wouldn't we? As the EU wants to build a screen, a solar screen, apparently, and I think they were listening behind the woodshed, because I said they were going to take a generator that microwave beams down the solar panel on the other side, and they could beam it to a spot on the Earth, and they can charge you big money for it. Now we see the story, though the EU wants to build their own solar blocker, proving that anthropomorphic global warming doesn't warm the climate, but the sun does. Even though the sustainable development doesn't recognize a sun, anthropomorphic global warming does not recognize that there's a sun out there. Go read for it. Go find the documents and read for it. It doesn't exist. They want to block something that doesn't exist. The EU wants to crack down on rogue efforts to alter the atmosphere. That title was pretty funny to me. Only the rogue ones, we're going to do it. So they're promoting themselves. The government hates competition. So they're going to crack down on all those rogue efforts that are out there, those private efforts that want to block the sun. And again, the stupidity, the insanity. Please don't block the sun. How about we don't, the first article of the United States is wanting to do it like a study, like a research study to find out the parameters of what this thing does, this sun does, relative to finding the actual and real contribution of the anthropomorphic fraud. It's not there. So it's all a a problem, but these people want to touch your life. They want to mess with your life by stopping the sun where you live. Now, this is also a big weapon, but anyway. Okay, as we start talking, the sun's out there, the world registers the hottest ever day. The average global temperature was above 17 degrees Celsius on Monday at 62 Fahrenheit, for those of us that don't understand the metric system. Thank you very much. And so, that the hottest temperature ever. Really? Ever? Ever? Okay, let's go read down to where you're going to find out that that was also consistent with that El Nino. The El Nino is driving this. You're going to find someone throw in the climate change, but it's actually El Nino driving this. And what is that? How does El Nino do it? But it's the cycle of the oceans, and it's driven by the sun. But ever, folks? You understand that these climate models are only made from measurements that were taken maybe back to the 1800s. And I'm not going to go through all this stuff. I just want to point out, do you know that the Earth has lasted, and environment and climate has lasted tons long timer than that? And we have the charts by doing different studies in science, real physical science, and we found out that it's been gobs and gobs hotter, gobs and gobs more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, big giant animals at the time, they tell us, that all enjoyed that, all carbon-based, and it was all much hotter. So when I see somebody that reports that 122 degrees someplace in the world is the hottest ever, I have to choke, because that isn't ever. They don't know that. This is all for our entertainment, apparently, and for fear. As we now move in to show more about this so-called anthropomorphic nonsense, we want to go to green power. The Europe is like the trying to be the pinnacle. Germany is destroying itself monetarily and economically because it went green. They're even abandoning, I think, the nuclear power. And so, but we see here, first battery-powered trains arrived in Europe. Let's go just scroll down, don't have to read too far. The 3 and 4 carat, this is EU green sustainable anthropomorphic solar blocker. The 3 and 4 carriage 300-seater trains are hybrid, working on battery, electric, and diesel power. Diesel power. Them bones, folks. The dry old bones are running this thing like any other engine. Any other train works just like this, only we're going to have batteries now. And guess what? Not only that, we have something called a pantograph on top in Europe, remember? Those little things on top that touch the electrical wires. They say here, it's the first time the batteries are used as the main energy source on a fleet of trains for commercial use in Europe. Okay, fine, great. How do you get the power to those? Well, it's diesel generator hybrid system. So I'm going to suggest to you, they've just found a different way to represent it, but that pantograph, that little connector that you see on top of those European trains, that goes under those connecting cables for the power, yeah, that replaces that extension cord that was supposed to be attached to your car that you would drive from home so you could power your electric car around. The pantograph is the extension cord hiding where the power comes from that's not diesel to drive this. Dem bones fuel, right, that I talked about before, and to keep the short-range batteries topped off. They only last like a few minutes. All right, so, okay, fine. It's a cool system, and it's actually pretty neat about the power transfer, but there's lots of losses for different reasons. This is not green, but Europe is embracing it. They make a big deal. They're actually making a big deal about this. And moving on, this nonsense, it's insanity. The world has gone nuts. It's not like I don't like these trains and these technologies. It's really cool stuff. But those trains, except for the batteries, they go down the tracks in your country. Okay, let's add batteries. Okay, fine. But they don't last long. Like all these electric things, as I've talked to you before, they promote a truck that uses battery power. It doesn't go that, it half the distance if it goes that far. And then it's diminished. And then you have to wait a long time for dem bones through a lossy system to come back and put the power back in. Moving on to more technocratic nonsense. Fed says 57 firms set to use FedNow instant payments after late July launch. Here it is. Boom, it's on us, folks. FedNow, 57 firms. I told you it was going on instant payments. It's going to be really quick and efficient, convenient, and yet they're third parties to you. And I've talked to you about how this works out. Again, they told us it was coming. No one, when I was talking about to watch out Bitcoin, these coin things, it's going to where the government controls it. They're going to be running their own. People didn't believe that. Here it is. The Fed did not provide specific dates for the launch, but 41 banks and 15 service providers, including large firms like J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of New York Mellon, and U.S. Bancorp, and Wells Fargo, have completed formal testing and will be ready to provide instant payments after the new service. When they told us they were ready to go and test, they weren't joking. It's already happening. They got it on. They have a schedule. You don't. They're winning. All right, so here it is, FedNow. And this is the interim connection, right, before we get to that Fed coin, that token citizenship. World Economic Forum praises CBDCs, calls for public-private partnerships and advancing cashless societies as motivations for the tech. In the 70s, 80s, I could not believe I was hearing the word cashless. This is global. What kind of a demon is this? And here we are. Fascinating. The World Economic Forum, as we are talking here, has unequivocally endorsed the adoption and proliferation of the central bank digital currencies at the summer Davos event this week. WF showcased through an array of discussions the pivotal role of public-private partnerships in fashioning an integrated financial system. I told you the third-party issue here is terrible. It's just what we cannot even get into. Nigel Farage, here's why, part of it, another lesson. Nigel Farage announces he's been a victim of financial deprogramming. They cut off his switch. They said no more. That's your future. That's how they're going to do this. NFC payments are about to become faster, easier, and truly contactless. Found this fascinating. Gets us back to Kobe Swindle. They use that in order to accelerate this ability to get to token citizenship and control over your lives. All right, so you read about these stories I'm going to put in here. Going to go through quick. Who did I was telling you was going to be talking about? BIS, the Bank of International Settlements. COVID-19 tells us in 2021, accelerated digitalization of payments. It's just a digitalization of payments. They make a big Fed now token life about it. It's just digitalization of payments if they have a control of the switch. COVID-19 pandemic has boosted the use of digital and contactless payments. It was about the fear mode. Remember, we talked about that earlier in the broadcast. The fear mode. Got it? And they got everybody moving, and they got them where they want them. And we have here the World Economic Forum praises the CBDCs. And we got a little section here. CBDCs are essential digital versions of national currencies touted to bring about an efficient, secure, and accessible monetary system. However, the alarming aspect is of almost Orwellian control in what could be potential to hand over the central banks and governments this power. Let me remind you, the CBDCs are not essential digital versions of national currencies and articles, as the article states. And I want to remind you again and further that these are economic weapons created as an entirely new foreign and harmful relationship with a token master. MasterCard goes to token master. A master-slave relationships. And remember, the way the relationship is, it will no longer be our money, but an expression of central bank ESG liability that is a CB. That is that if the central bank doesn't approve of how we are expressing its liability, it will limit and control where, how, when, and what we can pay and spend our money on, and whether or not we would spend it at all. It's called programmable CBDC. And so it's the worst, it's worse than the current bank system, the relationship where we drop our cash and we think it's our cash. It's actually, we're a dupe to the fact that we don't have a right of claim on the bank system's fiat currency. And so it's terrible what's moving through. They're pulling all of this away. And additionally, it's these contactless monetary systems interfere with societal infection, which routine exposure and pathogens keep immune system turned up. So they're getting rid of that so they can threaten you some more. And I hope I brought something to you here. The CBDC is a terrible thing. It's in going in. The wholesale side's on. It's coming around to your neighborhood near you, and you just need to be away from it. Use cash or get back into gold and silver coin. I hope something I said inspires you to correct things in the world and protect yourself in the minimum. And I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
foot opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.